This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning. A beautiful desert moon here in the valley in Phoenix and Scottsdale, Arizona. Roger, the desert moon seems to be bigger than back in the Midwest. I'm not sure about that, but looking like a very fine Easter weekend here as we come your way with the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong will be along, and I'm going to share with you a definition of what's happening agriculturally in the United States as defined by the chief economist for John Deere & Company, J.B. Penn. J.B. has spent his entire career in agriculture with corporations and marketing groups and with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I'm going to share that with you in just a couple of minutes. But yesterday, of course, the markets were closed. But that didn't keep the government from issuing some reports, like the gross domestic report. But the quarterly pig crop report was issued yesterday afternoon. Well, actually, 11 o'clock. Normally, it would be afternoon, but because of the holiday in the marketplace, they released the numbers at 11 o'clock. And they weren't a great deal different. So we'll get to those numbers, too, before we leave you here on this Saturday morning. And stay with us because we're going to share the remarks of J.B. Penn when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. 13 minutes after 5 o'clock here this morning on the Saturday morning show. Earlier this month, on the 15th, National Agriculture Day in Washington, D.C., and at the Salute to Agriculture banquet in the patio of the headquarters building of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the keynote address was delivered by J.B. Penn, who is chief economist for Deere & Company, but he's been involved in the U.S. Department of Agriculture and marketing firms and has been a part of agriculture his entire career. And he delivered, I think, some very positive remarks about the business of agriculture in this country. And I wanted to share it with you after I asked him his feelings about agriculture in the U.S.
Well, it's quite a success story. I mean, our industry has lots of things to be proud of. I mean, we have essentially enabled a large country to be fed and to be fed less expensively over time, so that today the average consumer spends less than 10% of the disposable income for food. And that contrasts with 50%, 60% in many other countries of the world. And we're doing it more sustainably now. We're doing it with lots of advanced technology that enhances the environment and is good for wildlife. And so it's just a great success story.
And you listed some interesting facts going back a century on what has happened to agriculture production because of technology and equipment.
Yes, that's true. We've had some big waves of technology. We've had mechanization. We've had hybridization, the introduction of hybrid varieties. We've had the introduction of fertilizers and pesticides. We've had genetic modifications in plants, and now we're seeing a new wave of technology that's resulted in precision farming and the use of computers and sensors and satellites and all of those things to enable us to more precisely use the inputs that farmers use.
And production and yields per acre have climbed dramatically.
Have climbed dramatically, yeah, just very much so. It you know, I used an example where long time ago, it took many, many labor hours and lots of land to produce a given amount of corn. And today, it takes very little labor and a much smaller amount of land, and we get the same amount of corn. So it's been a great success story.
Do you think we can keep up with the growth in population?
Well, that's one of the things that I talked about tonight. That depends on us continuing this stream of new technology, continuing this productivity growth. And that's going to require science-based regulation, spending on research and development. It's going to mean we have to keep the technology pipeline full. And more, there's a big lag. Once you decide to create a new product, it takes a dozen years and lots of money. And so, you know, we have to be making decisions and investments today that won't pay off for a dozen years into the future.
That's J.B. Penn, chief economist with Deere and Company, stating, I think, some very interesting and positive facts about U.S. agriculture. And he talked about the need for technology. And to those in this country who fight technology, who fight science, who don't want biotechnology, as I've said many times, you're selfish. Because if you deny biotechnology, you will condemn millions of people on the planet to starvation. So keep that in mind when you say, we don't want any of this stuff that's not natural or the way it was always done. We can't do it the way it was always done and feed the world. Well, they've had some problems in the Plains states this week. Normally tornado time and all of that. But there was another problem, and Max Armstrong checks in to talk about that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. We're at 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here this morning, and as I said earlier, normally in springtime around the country, we're concerned about flooding, and we're concerned about tornadoes and severe storm activity. But in Kansas and Oklahoma this week, they were concerned about something else. Is that right, Max Armstrong?
Well, Orion, it sure has been bad along the Kansas-Oklahoma border where the wildfires have raged across the ranch land this week. And they haven't covered that many days, but my goodness, they've covered a lot of acreage there. Dr. Tom Carr, retired meat scientist from the University of Illinois, went back home to live in that part of Kansas some time ago and has had, unfortunately, a front row seat. Dr. Carr, we welcome you to the broadcast here on WGN Radio and are sorry to hear that you've lost some property there in the fires this week.
Well, thank you very much, and it has been a very, very challenging day. The actual fire started in just across the Oklahoma border, about 5 miles west of Alva, Oklahoma, sometime on a Tuesday afternoon, and then it worked its way north because of a south-southwest wind, and really broke out in Kansas and Comanche County and especially Barber County on Wednesday.
You're in Barber County, which is Medicine Lodge is the county seat there. And as I recall, there are about 5,000 people who live in the county, about 1,100 square miles. And I would imagine there are a few cattle there, too.
Yeah, there's a significant number of cattle. And there's some areas of the county where, you know, people rent their grassland. And those contracts usually start around April 1, April 15th. So that helped a little bit in that there were grassland where there were no cattle, but there's a significant number that, you know, had cow-calf operations, and we really don't know how many head of cattle have been lost yet. There's been quite a number of small calves that were lost.
You mentioned the wind. How fast was it moving the fire?
I think mid-afternoon, it hit our little ranch about 1 o'clock, and I think the winds were rolling between 40 and 50 mile an hour.
Oh, my goodness. No wonder it spread so quickly.
Yes. Yeah, there's just no way of getting in front of it and stopping it. You just had to let it go.
Did the firefighters attempt, at least in some areas, to put in some fire breaks to protect properties?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was continual efforts, you know, in trying to do that, and then of course the big concerns was trying to protect ranchers' homes, and so you know there was a lot of different activities going on, and without the volunteer firefighters that we had coming in from all over, there would have been a lot more property loss than what there was.
Dr. Carr, what was the extent of loss at your place?
Well, we actually didn't lose anything, and we've only got a couple of structures on the place as it was, and we were able to save them, and so we didn't, we were fortunate, but there were some close neighbors to us that weren't that fortunate.
We have heard that one immediate need is hay, that hay donations are being welcomed there into that region.
Well, that's very true, but I just saw and just noticed that we've got a news release that hay demands, at least at this point in time, have been met. So there's been a tremendous outpouring of from other producers in the state, and so I think we're setting pretty good right now at this point in time on a supply of hay. But you know, there's many miles of fence that have been completely burned up, and that's a big challenge in front of a lot of ranchers right now.
I noticed that cash donations were being welcomed by the Kansas Livestock Foundation. That's in Topeka, as I recall.
And you are correct on that. They've certainly opened up to accept that, and I know that there'll be a lot of ranchers that would appreciate any help in that regard.
Dr. Carr, how common are wildfires in that region? Now, we know sometimes controlled burns are utilized when there is not a threat of a wind, and you know, fire isn't necessarily always a bad thing, is it?
No, it's in fact it's a very good thing, and we've been in this particular part of the state and in Oklahoma have been fighting an eastern cedar infestation that's been really significant in the last 20, 25 years. And so the silver lining in this tragic fire is that there have been millions of eastern cedars killed. And so that has been a plus. But we have had a few wildfires this spring because it's so dry. We've had less than an inch of rain right here in Medicine Lodge since January 1. And so it's really, really dry. And we've had a few small wildfires that have gotten loose in the past 3 weeks. But, you know, very, very small compared to this. And in fact, our prescribed burn association, because of it's been so windy, we've only been able to conduct two prescribed burns, and we had about 18 scheduled, and we won't have to worry about that now, though, because it's all been taken care of by Mother Nature.
Well, Dr. Carr, we hope you get some rain to help bring those fires under control there, southern Kansas, northern Oklahoma. Thank you for taking the time to visit with us here on WGN Radio to paint the picture for us.
Okay, thank you, Max. Appreciate it.
Dr. Tom Carr, respected animal scientist, retired from the University of Illinois, back on his home in Kansas, his home ranch there near Medicine Lodge, where the fires have raged this week, Orion. And yes, the Kansas Livestock Foundation is accepting donations to help with the loss of property, the fences, the cows, the calves. I tweeted the address, the Kansas Livestock Foundation, Topeka, Kansas. If anybody wants to get the detailed address, they can just go to my account on Twitter. At Max Armstrong. Orion?
Okay, Max, and we'll look forward to your market visit a little bit later with Paul Giorgi of Allendale joining us this morning in the studio. But again, what farmers and ranchers have to contend with in order to put food on the dinner table, because you've got Mother Nature, you've got government, you've got rules, and you've got various special interest groups that don't always make it easy for farmers and ranchers to do what they do. And in this case, in the plains, Kansas and Oklahoma, wildfire. Well, despite the fact that the markets were closed yesterday in observance of Good Friday, the Department of Agriculture has its schedule to follow. And part of that schedule is the last Friday of March. Every year, they report the quarterly pig and hog numbers. So what about our future supply of pork chops and bacon and ham? Well, the numbers were issued yesterday, and I don't think there's much for traders to actually trade on Monday, because the numbers pretty much in line with expectations and not really changed all that much from March a year ago. How many hogs in the United States? 67,600,000. That was up just slightly from March 1st a year ago, but it's down 1% from December 1st of last year. The number of sows kept for breeding, 5,980,000. That's down slightly from last year and also down slightly from the previous quarter. And then how many hogs ready for market? Well, market hog inventory came in at 61,700,000. That's up slightly from last year, but it's down 1% from the last quarter. And the December 2015 to February of this year pig crop numbers, 29,600,000 head, down slightly from 2015. Sows farrowing during this period totaled 2,870,000, down 1% from a year ago. So those are the highlights of that hog and pig crop report issued yesterday by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And, of course, next week on the last day of the month, we'll get the numbers in the planting intentions report, the survey of grain and soybean farmers across the country on what they think they'll be planting when the season gets rolling. That report will be out the last day of the month. And also the last day of the month, we'll get the quarterly supply-demand report, the numbers, grain stocks, and all that from the USDA. So a couple of important reports coming out next week following that pig crop report that was issued yesterday. We're at the halfway mark here on the Saturday morning show, and we'll take a break for news and then be back with Samuelson Says, and also look at market activity with Paul Georgie of Allendale. Thank you, Roger. And if you're interested, it's 64 degrees and clear with a desert moon here in Scottsdale, Arizona. But talking to friends of mine in the restaurant and lodging business here in the valley, they tell me this has been the best snowbird season they've had in 5 years. And all you have to do is get on the streets and roadways of this part of Arizona, and traffic is really out there. And you better have reservations if you're going to a restaurant, because they're going to be packed. Spring training, of course, attracting a lot of people, along with the weather, which is always pleasant. Well, welcome back to the Saturday Morning Show. We're with you until 6 o'clock this morning. And Max Armstrong will talk markets with Paul Georgie of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, in just a few minutes. But right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says. I'm Orion Samuelson, and this week, talking about the challenge of paying for a college education. It's all brought to you by Wink Products Company, and we'll get to our comments right after this. It's really that time of year, time to tackle some difficult tasks like cleaning those appliances. And you don't want to forget probably your most treasured appliance. It certainly is in our household. That's the coffee maker. Wink Products Coffee Maker Cleaner is the perfect cleaning solution to remove those nasty mineral deposits that can make your coffee taste metallic and cause your coffee maker to clog. So here's the answer. Pick up Wink Coffee Maker Cleaner today and see what a difference it makes. Learn more about all of the Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. At National Agriculture Day, back on March 15th, one of the areas that I really like to see happen every year is the increasing number of young people that come to Washington, D.C. for National Agriculture Day, learn what it's like to visit members of Congress and talk about the importance of their organizations in our food future. 4-H'ers, FFA members, National Outstanding Young Farmers, and then the group AFA, the Agriculture Future of America. That's sort of the next step after FFA, which is basically made up of high school students, but AFA is made up of college students. And it was fun to visit with these young people who are enthused about careers in agriculture and agribusiness, going to college to prepare themselves for careers in businesses, corporations, or on the farm. But they also express some concerns about getting that diploma without being left with a mountain of student loan debt. And they talked about, you know, the challenge of paying for the college education. Well, here's my advice to parents and to young people who are getting set to go off to college on some areas where you can get help. Because there, I would say every week, across my desk comes a release from a commodity organization, from a commodity and agricultural policy organizations, as well as agribusinesses offering college scholarships for people studying agriculture. And so I would urge you to talk to your counselor in high school, learn about the many scholarships, some big, some small, but at least they all help to pay for your college education. As a matter of fact, to give you an idea of what happens just this week, Zoetis and the Association of American Veterinary Medical Colleges announced this year's winners of the Zoetis Veterinary Student Scholarship Program, which is now in its sixth year. And this week, the program recognized 353 second- and third-year veterinary students at the 2016 Student American Veterinary Medical Association Conference. But get this, the value of the scholarships, $700,000. Because one of the areas in the world of agriculture that there is a real need is veterinarians. Because a lot of young people going to veterinary school today don't want to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to pull a calf or to visit a farm that has a problem with health of its animals. And they want to go into town and treat canaries and fish and dogs and cats and all that sort of thing. So we need large animal veterinarians. And this is just one example of the dollar help that is available. And for example, not only corporations and organizations and others, but a lot of individual scholarships made possible by people who want to help students out in that school. For example, Gloria and I have a college scholarship fund at the University of Illinois. And for students studying agriculture this past year, we were able to present five $1,500 scholarships for the year. So take a look around and explore every opportunity and avenue to take advantage of these agricultural college scholarships. That's my advice on Samuelson Says, and we're a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. Well, we need people in the world of agricultural marketing, and we're fortunate to know quite a few people who are in that industry, but they too are needing young people to come into the industry. We're going to get this week's report from Max and Paul Georgi when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
Paul Georgi, Allendale Incorporated, joining us in the studio. We always appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, sir, especially as we have big reports looming. And there's one coming up in the week ahead that'll be one of the biggest of the year, that prospective plantings report.
Exactly. I think the we hope that creates some excitement in the grain markets. It should. Historically, it does. The factor that the trade's going to be looking at, I think, is the corn planted acreage. Allendale survey said we're going to have 90.4 million acres planted. USDA at 90 million acres on their February outlook meeting. So that's going to be a key number. We hear a lot of shifting and talk in the trade right now. We've had some nice rally in soybeans. We had 60 cents rally in soybeans since the 1st of March. And that's when they usually take the survey that first 2 weeks of March. So we may not get much shifting because of profitability changes and so forth. So We're looking for a big number in corn, soybeans to be a little bit higher than the USDA number at 82.5 million acres.
Is acreage more in play around the fringes of the Corn Belt, if you would? I mean, I'm thinking of northern areas up into the Dakotas. I'm thinking of the eastern Corn Belt where planting it was either greatly delayed or didn't happen last year. I'm thinking of the southern part of the United States where they're looking at cotton versus soybeans or corn. In the heart of the Corn Belt, a lot of growers have told me, yeah, we're just going to kind of hold it. We do 50-50 mix and we don't change much.
Exactly. And I think that's the bottom line. When you think about right now in March, early April, we're going to talk about the fringe areas. We're going to talk about the Delta. Are they getting planted? How much shifting is going on there in North Dakota? Can they get in early? And they can shift a lot of acres from corn to wheat or corn to soybeans up there. But the bottom line, when this October, November comes around, it's what kind of yield and what kind of acreage we've planted in the Midwest and in the Corn Belt.
Are bankers having some input in some areas on this too?
Well, the bankers, I think, are having an impact. I mean, we're hearing stories that are sad stories where you've got the farmer goes in for a renew his loan for this year, and the banker just says flat out, no, go somewhere else and try to find some money. So that, I think, is having an impact. I think the farmer, though, will try to plant corn if he can financially because he knows he can get more yield off of that, therefore he can possibly get a greater return. Where if he goes in and plants soybeans, then he knows he's going to have a loss at this point in time unless bean prices rally sharply during the year. So he's going to go in with the attitude, can I get the corn planted? And if I can, I got a chance for a better return than I do on soybeans.
We're going to be looking at some usage numbers here before long, too, and as the USDA analyzes just how much of this grain is being used out there. One thing that occurs to me is that it appears ethanol demand is staying very strong. Ethanol usage, in fact, is exceeding expectations, is it not?
It is. Ethanol production is very strong. We expect that we're going to see that the USDA is going to have to change on their balance sheet one of these times, maybe even as much as 50 million bushel increase usage for ethanol because of the strong ethanol production that we've seen here throughout most of the marketing year. Now, the question is, how much will change on this quarterly stocks report? The usage should go up because of the ethanol production. It should go up because of livestock production and that we've had more cattle and hogs. We've on feed, so therefore we could see more of that in the second quarter. So we're expecting that possibly we could see an improvement in usage, or I should say in the stocks number, which would mean that we used more of it, less stocks. However, I don't think it matters much to the bottom line when we get to the end of the year. 30 to 50 million bushel switch, it doesn't do much for us as far as the bottom line goes. We're still going to have plenty of corn and still a large carryout.
Do you think that this report, whatever it brings our way, will quickly be put in the rearview mirror and then we'll be looking at crop planting season weather?
Well, I think let's just say this way. We hope that this report gives us some excitement, some energy to move this market out of the trading range that we're in, that we get a rally out of this thing so the farmers can sell grain at a better price and improve their revenue. But it looks like we're only going to have a short period of time where we'll get a reaction. Historically, within 2 weeks of this report, we're back at the level we were before the report. So hopefully we get some volatility because of that. Weather is going to be a factor, but right now, weather, I mean, people are trying to draw excitement out of weather, and we're just not getting it. I think the thing that grain traders are looking at now is more of the financial situation. As I call it, currency wars that we've got, the central banks of these various countries, the EU, China, South America, the U.S., the Fed, what are they going to do with interest rates and currency? Because that's having a huge impact on our demand and our exportability of our grain. And if we raise interest rates and make a stronger dollar here in the U.S., that just slows down our export demand. And that could have as much of an impact on price as weather here for the next several weeks and months.
The signal from the Fed, though, has been that they're probably going to pretty much hold the line on rates. Isn't that the case?
Well, that's what the signal was last week. This week, there's more Fed presidents talking, and they're leaning toward a possible. There's another one or two leaning toward possible increase in interest rates, interest rate hikes here in the U.S. So it's a battle. And as one of the Fed presidents has said in a comment, he says, we do have some very live meetings when the Fed meets. So there is discussion. Will they hold the line? Personally, I think they need to hold the line because the rest of the world is decreasing interest rates, and we don't want to be out in left field here with the idea of increasing rates.
And really, when you look at our domestic economy, the signals have not been very strong, have they, in terms of, for example, the housing industry and other indicators that are watched?
No, I think, you know, higher interest rates really doesn't do agriculture any good either, because if we raise interest rates, that means the banks need more money. The cost of production goes up. Possibly the land values go down, you know, so it can impact agriculture dramatically. So a stable interest rate right now this year is good for the farmer.
Put in perspective what that strength of the dollar does in terms of our grain exports. Can you relate that in some way? When the dollar does rise, to what degree does it hurt our exports?
Well, I don't know if you can put a dollar and cents to it on a day-to-day basis, but bottom line is, when the U.S. dollar goes up, the foreign currencies go down. Therefore, it makes the grain coming out of Russia, for instance, coming out of South America, where we've got tremendous competition right now for soybeans. When the dollar rallies, the real in Brazil and the peso in Argentina go down. Therefore, it increases the value of their grains domestically down there, and their farmers sell because of higher prices. So, and the world buyer can buy their grain cheaper there because of the lower valued currency. So that is what stalls out our demand, and we see that on a weekly basis. Corn and soybeans, for instance, where weekly demand reports show less and less sales coming out of the U.S. We're running way behind on corn sales for the year. So that actually may have an adjustment from what we're seeing increasing in ethanol demand. Our export demand could offset that and hold the supply steady, too. So
we need something to bring a little life into the market, you're saying?
We do need something to bring some life, and I think the life is coming from looking at other areas, like the currency markets, like the strength in the stock market. Some of these outside markets may actually have the biggest impact on prices and traders' attitude. We've also have got the situation with regulations, the CFTC, and the regulations that we continue to have to deal with is also causing some flatness in price, because investors are pulling out saying, I don't want to deal with this regulation anymore. I'm going to be on the sideline.
Paul, thank you for joining us. We always appreciate your visits.
Thank you very much, Max.
Paul Georgie, Allendale Incorporated.
We are less than 3 minutes away from 6 o'clock news here on this Saturday morning, but I do want to remind you there is a deadline approaching for submission of nominations to a very special program. Next Tuesday, March 29th, is the deadline for nominating your favorite mom and or other farm lady for the title Monsanto's America's Farmer's Mom of the Year. Deadline, the end of the business day, next Tuesday. 5 regional winners will be selected by a panel of judges from American AgriWomen, and those winners will be announced about April 30th. And then just before Mother's Day, they'll name from those 5 winners the America's Mom of the Year. Now, it's well worth the nomination because the five winners will each get $5,000, and then the overall national winner will get $15,000 in cash. So get busy and nominate your favorite farmer's mom and have it in to the Monsanto people by next Tuesday. You can get all the information at americasfarmers.com. That's americasfarmers.com. And we've met some of the previous winners, and indeed they focus on, well, really four areas: farm, family, community, and agriculture. So good luck out there. It's a good program, and I'm glad that they're doing it to recognize the important role that women play in our food, fiber, and energy industry here in the United States. Well, that brings to a close our Saturday morning show. A blessed Easter to you on this Easter weekend. And stay with us because it's news time on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.